Feel the pulse of the real life on 657 AM.
The time, 22 minutes to 8 o'clock. You're listening to Radio Pulpit 657 AM. With me in studio, I have the privilege of introducing you to a man that I got to know, well, actually my husband got to know first, on our Loop Summit May Camp, York Roddard. Am I saying your surname correctly?
Yes, it's York.
And the surname? Yeah.
And the surname is Rodder.
Rodder.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? It's quite unique.
Yeah, yes, it's not very well known here, but it comes from Cornwall. And my great-grandfather sailed from Cornwall before the Boer War. And
you're imported, huh? My family's imported.
Yeah. So there are a lot of Rodders in Cornwall. It's a fairly common name there. And I went back to England to look for my ancestry. And I went to Cornwall on a sort of holiday. And people said, you know, why you come to England? And I said, well, one of the things is I've come to find my ancestry, to find my roots.
Yeah.
And I said, tell me about the Rodders. And I found a person who was a Rodder, and he'd looked at the history of the name. And I was thinking there's going to be a castle somewhere.
Because it sounds all important.
Yes. Anyway.
Did you find a hovel?
To my joy, I found that the Rodders were worse than pirates. You know, pirates come from Penzance in that area, and they were shipwreckers. And they would light a fire at a very stormy night. They would light fires to help the travelers, the sailors, find a safe haven.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
they were wrecking these ships.
They were rocks.
Looting. I'm so glad that you didn't take that legacy of yours seriously and start something here in South Africa.
Yeah. No.
So when did the Rodders then find Jesus? Or you the first?
I'm, as far as I sort of know, in terms of in South Africa, one of the first in terms of my family. But I just know that there's an inheritance that somewhere along the line, a grandfather or great-grandfather or grandmother prayed for her offspring.
Yeah.
And I believe that I sense it in my life, you know, that God's hand is upon me in a extraordinary way. So at age 20, I find... full of pride. I was a very proud, very well educated, beyond my ability. I was educated. They call those intellectuals.
Ah, beyond your ability. Okay.
Anyway, I was white and English speaking. I thought I was better than the Afrikaners, and I think deep down that's true. And
yeah.
And Jesus. I almost felt him coming towards me and saying, well, I just knew I was a sinner and I needed a savior. Before that day, I would say, of course I'm a sinner. Everyone's a sinner, but not so serious.
Yeah. It's the excuse why we can do what we do. We sin most.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not so serious. You know, we all are. And you don't need a savior, but that day... I just knew that if I died, I would have gone to hell.
How, York? How did he convey this message to you?
Well, it was I was seeking, and so I think because of my pride, I said, look, it's not for me. You know, this life, but how God came to me is, I think it was, I first of all said, I'm never coming to church. I went to church and I recognized I was a hypocrite. And I said to God, God, if you exist.
The famous sentence.
Yes,
if you exist,
then you can hear my prayer. And if you don't, that's okay. But I'm never coming to church again because I'm a hypocrite. Because I don't really believe. It's not a reality.
Yeah.
And I hate hypocrites. So I started searching, and it was in a small room, and a friend of mine had invited me to a Bible study, Don Neisel, and at university, a small little cubicle of our where students lived. And Don said, are you born again? And I said, well, yes. I mean, I'm an Anglican anyway. And so he had a Bible study, and he went straight to John 3. You must be born again. And poor Don, I was sitting. I really wanted to know what it meant. And it was garbage. And the more he spoke, the more garbage it sounded to me. Because all of a sudden, I my confidence had gone. You know, I thought I knew everything. I went to an Anglican school, and I even went to services voluntarily, and I thought that was quite good.
Yeah, because you're such a good person and all.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, while we were trying to battle with this scripture, you must be born again, there's a knock on the door, and a 72-year-old man, retired, who would visit students early in the morning or in the afternoon, he opened the door, and he came and he gave his testimony. And in every step of his walk, he said it was because God was in my life, things changed. He basically told me about his when he was about 20. And I just saw I could follow my father, who was a good man and really failed in many things, but kind, but made no impact on anyone's lives, really. He disappointed me in many ways. Or I could follow Vic Pierce, who, and I just, and it was at that stage, I think it was at that moment, I felt Jesus coming to me. When looking back, I see it was, you know, I didn't see a vision or anything, but the deep conviction that I'm going my own way, being a good man, and good people are sinners when they're going their own way. And
Uncle Angus says, so good people don't go to heaven, saved people go to heaven.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And most of us, we think we're good. We really do.
Yeah.
And that's
and we
why
probably are.
Well, goodish. Goodish.
Yes.
Sort of plus minus around there. Yes. Around the mark, and then we miss the mark completely in all our goodness.
Yeah.
Not too bad, not too good.
Yeah.
So to me, salvation is such a miraculous thing. Yeah. This invisible God that convinces your heart, then convicts your heart.
That's right.
And you get to this place where you are that no one can tell you anything else. You know that you know that you know, and it changed your life completely. How did your life change after that?
So it's a long time ago, Janine.
Yes, no. I know you still remember all the finest details. You tell me.
I think I was a deep inferiority. My father was an alcoholic, but an outward confidence. And I think I was a man who liked rules. I had become head boy of my school, and so I sort of believed in the law. And you must obey all the rules, and
there's control in that a lot.
Horrible. And I think I softened and humbled myself a little bit. So I changed significantly, so much that other people saw that knew me at school. They said, York, you've changed. So I dropped my exterior confidence or self-assurance and took on a genuineness, a realness.
And how did your perception of God change? Because that's something that's definitely, we do have preconceived ideas of God when we're not saved. And then when we get to know him and who he really is, how did that change?
Yes, it certainly did. He became, I think, a father. Yeah. I suppose my self-condemnation had to change because he's not out to condemn us or to to judge us. He's out, he came to save us and to heal us, to heal our heart. You know, so I think I started seeing him, and it is a process of seeing him who he is. Yeah. He wants what's good for us. And I think we think that he wants to catch us
out on our sin or something like that.
Yeah.
But did you have to, especially if your father, your own father?
Yeah,
I've seen through all of these years. You recognize that doesn't matter the fact that you know that they're only human.
Yes.
They still represent God as a father. Somehow you equate the way your father is, the decisions he made, the mistakes he made. It's as if God has to prove that he's not like your father.
Yes.
If he wants to be your father, that that he's not going to drop you, that he's not going to disappoint you. And when things happen in life that you don't understand, you sort of, your first way your brain goes because of your own father is not that, oh, but God is different. It's like, did you have that conflict in you as well?
I mean, it's beautiful that you ask me, and I mean that. Thank you. Because my father was a genuinely loving, kind man.
Mm.
And he was proud of me. He loved me. And I was angry with him because he disappointed me. So I just the fact that he honored me, in a way, my son, I'm proud of you.
Mm.
Those words, all the sin cannot overcome a father's love. So I think deep down, I know a lot of people, they get abused by their father.
Yeah.
And
especially if they're alcoholics.
Yes.
The effect of that is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my father, yeah, exactly. And he did abuse verbally my mother, and that hurt me a lot. But I never, felt it personally. If somebody abuses your mother, also
touch my mother, you touch me. Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And a deep disappointment in him. You know, I want him to be my dad.
Yeah,
and he was a wonderful father, and he was a farmer. And I saw him disappointed year after year. We got a lot of drought, worm borer, or what? Mealy borer, and
my husband would know. Don't know. Yeah,
locusts
sure.
came, and so he didn't do well at farming. Always in debt, and hope was smashed. Yeah, I just saw alcohol was his escape, as you get wise afterwards.
Yeah.
So I was an abusive son, and that is a terrible thing. It's my only, my main regret in my life was how I hurt a kind man who needed a son to say, I love you, Dad.
Mm.
And I got to say that to him. I got to say sorry to him. About 3 days before he died, I said, Dad, I'm sorry. And I meant it. But he said he was very ill. And he said, just lie with me and love me. And I lay down next to him on his bed. And he fell asleep and I was off. And I wish I'd stayed a bit longer. And his life passed away. He was a smoker and a drinker, obviously.
Yeah.
drinker if you're an alcoholic. And he died with difficulty. You know, it's not easy to die.
Sure.
When you're sort of depressed and your body is fading.
And that's your big regret in life, is?
Yeah, I think it's my number one regret is I didn't honor him. I forgave myself, and when he died, I did honor him to a large extent, but only when he died fully did I come to understand, with counseling, that I wanted a father that was strong.
Can we get you your ministry? Because I see our time is... What? Look at that time. That's ridiculous. Ach, nee. Okay.
Yes, brought
the feel. Tell me about the recyclers that you work with and how you got there and what do you actually do with these guys?
Okay. Basically, I'm a health educator. Mm-hmm. And I... People say this COVID thing, they say, oh, in the townships, it's going to spread like wildfire.
Everybody expected that.
Yeah. Mm. And so I wanted to find out for myself, and I tried to phone a chap. I was given a contact through Dare to Love, one of the Dare to Love leaders. And I couldn't understand what he said. So I said, Love More, let me come and visit you in Mooi Plaas, which is an informal settlement west of... to the west of Centurion. And we arranged on 4th of October, and I pitched up there Sunday morning, beautiful day, and he took me up. And I asked him on the way there, I've just come to ask, is there any COVID here?
You worried about COVID, yeah?
And he said, no COVID. You know, very clear, black and white.
Yeah.
There was nobody that he knew that it was October last year. And anyway, we sat down in an open bit of near a house, near a shack. There are only shacks there. There are no proper buildings.
Yeah.
And talked, and he kept me waiting until suddenly at about 1 o'clock, people started pitching up. And I spoke to them, and because they expected me to say something. And I said, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And that's all that I had to say, really. I had prepared nothing. But it led me to, I'd done a bit of work with Discovery Bible Study and learnt about that. And
nice and simple, and people can do it, yeah.
And I said, I want just 4 people that will come for, and I'll come every week. And those 4 can tell the others. There were about 40 people that were listening to me. And so that's what it started. I didn't go to Mooi Plaas to make disciples, but I'm staying there to make disciples. And I go every week almost. Sometimes people come with me. Sometimes I have to go alone. And it's been wonderful. And I've focused on just a few people, but built up a relationship with the whole team through that. You know, they've known me from that first day. And so basically I've listened to them and tried to help them. They were very unjustly treated. The Metro didn't come to listen to them. But, and this is, in our last 2 minutes, the wonderful thing is that people from our city, from the CEO of our city, two of their workers came and spoke to the recyclers and said, look, we want to find out about you because the Metro wants to kick you off the land here because it's unsafe. You mentioned the trolleys.
Yeah.
And anyway, they listened and they saw they're good people. They're trying to feed their family. They're doing a wonderful job for the city. They're providing expensive raw materials for the plastic industry, cardboard, tin, aluminium. They're providing raw materials cheaply.
That otherwise would have landed up in some heap somewhere and would have...
In a dump.
Yeah.
And they save space in a dump. So thank you that I got there. Je maak een fout, dis nie een minuut.
Yeah. Okay. I tell you what, in that last minute... You've got South Africa listening. You've got a heart for these people that you work with every day. Introduce us to them. Tell us what you want us to know about these people. So the next time we drive past with this miffed heart of why are you taking up space in the room, what do you want us to know?
Yeah. They're very different. I spoke to only Shona speaking. I've got to know the Shona speaking Zimbabweans. And they send 3/4 of their money back home to their parents, their siblings. A headmaster earns in Zimbabwe earns less than they do on the street.
Oh, my word.
So they care for each other. They have a moral code that we really need. They I won't say to a young lady who's married with a child, I won't call her by her first name. I'll call her Ma. shanti, or ma klopas.
As a sign of respect.
Respect, yeah. And so their moral code, and they're faithful to wives and husbands and parents. They honor their parents back home, and they want to send money to them because they are, some of them are literally sort of starving.
Sure.
So just know that those recyclers are doing a good job. They're doing their best. Not all of them. Some of them are skirka, and a lot of them are drinkers. This time, Manda.
So respect. Respect.
Respect.
They know
them.
How to show respect, and we can respect them,
yes,
as well.
Yes, and just honor them for their work. And they work hard. Mm. People, I think, all see that.
Yeah, yeah.
And
York, thank you for your work. Thank you for representing Christianity there. If people want to join you, is there any way they can contact you?
The answer is not easily. I've recently joined a forum and of recycler sort of leaders, but I don't know much what's going on.
They want to join you.
Okay.
Go minister with you.
The goodway.org.
Goodway.org.
I've got a contact details there. So you can send me an email is the best. It's one word, the good way, all linked together, small letters, the good way.
Dot org. There you have it. I'll post it for you on Facebook. York, thank you very much.
Okay.
Much appreciated.
Yeah.
We'll do 3 seconds of Arnold Tevet, then we'll be at the news.